Hello, hello.
Hola.
She went Spanish this time.
Buenos dias. It's 11 p.m.
Whenever you're listening to this, hello.
And welcome.
How have you been, Jame?
I'm good. I'm tired, but I was just looking at some of my Oracle cards, doing a little reading, so that was fun. Yeah.
The last time I looked at mine, I was not happy with the answer, but...
And it was accurate.
And it was correct. But that's, you know, that's fine.
How are you?
I am...
Caffeinated.
I am caffeinated, you're correct. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what?
Enough chit-chat. We need to start chit-chatting.
I'm Kate.
And I'm Jane. And this is Creeps and Coffee,
a show where we talk about the dark parts of the world around us.
Cryptids, conspiracies, things that go bump in the night.
And the crimes behind the scariest creatures of all, humans.
Join us as we take a look at the stories sure to give you the creeps.
Pull up a seat, grab a coffee,
and let's have a chat.
It's been a hot minute since we've talked about conspiracies.
I feel like it's because I go down these rabbit holes and I want to talk about them all the time, but we can't because then we just sound crazy. So then I like put it off to the side and then I tell you about the conspiracies I find and then we never talk about them. But they're still one of my favorite episodes to do.
This is, and I think I've mentioned this before, this is my problem with it, is because, as Jamie alluded to, we talk about conspiracies between us daily.
We're crazy.
It's a constant thing. So I always think that we've posted more content about conspiracies than we have.
Same with cryptids. You're like, oh, I don't know, we did a cryptid episode recently, and I'm like, that was 8 months ago. And you're like, oh.
This, I think, is the first time we've had a new conspiracy episode where I'm like, you know what, it actually feels like it's been a decent amount of time since we've talked conspiracies.
And we also don't really know what our conspiracies are for each other, so.
No, this is that we've really left us,
you left gave each other me like the titles, and I didn't do any research on what you were talking about, so.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm excited for these.
Me too.
Because, like I said, I got a lot of caffeine in my system right now.
Yikes.
Did I take my ADHD meds?
No.
So, I am ready to just jump into the world of conspiracies. I'm not even talking about aliens this time.
Yeah, and if you're binge listening to these episodes, take a shot every time Caitlin didn't take her ADHD meds. You'll get loaded.
A couple times.
Which is enough.
That's what having a podcast is for. I forget my meds and I can just go.
All of mine, I will say, are short and sweet, but I'm Delulu, so I could talk on and on about them, but I won't.
Because that's the entire premise of this show.
I feel like you have a lot to talk about of yours.
Always.
Mine are more just like, don't trust anyone. The government is crazy.
That's the funny thing, and this is a side note again, but here we go. That's what's always interesting to me about our conspiracies that we talk about, is like, even when we're doing it between us, my conspiracies are always like historical, like how would this have changed the perception of the war and like all this stuff. How did the pyramids get there? And you're like, don't
fucking
trust.
Frogs are turning gay from the water in Florida.
TikTok is out to get us.
Speaking of.
Anyway. Oh, God.
Just kidding. So, for a little preface, do you know, Caitlin, what it's like an acronym, a PSYOP. Starts with a P.
Oh, a PSYOP.
Yeah.
A psychological operative.
Yeah, so it's a psychological operation.
Fuck, I was going to say that, and then I was like, no, that's not
literally
it.
Literally the same thing, so you're right. You're right. So for anyone who doesn't know, a psychological operation, The definition for this is a planned psychological activity or activities using methods of communications and other means directed to approved audiences in order to achieve influence, perceptions, attitude, and alter behaviors affecting the achievements of political and or military gain. The conspiracy is that conspiracies are a psyop themselves.
Uh-oh. This is a bad day for me to not have taken my medication.
So, like, the government is letting us believe these theories or planting these ideas so that we're either not worried about the real issues at hand, or, like with aliens, they let us go on all of these conspiracy theories about how aliens are real, and then that debunks it because, like, people who are, like, normal and neurotypical are like, okay, well, these guys are just being cuckoo. Aliens aren't real, but they are, and the government is doing this to gaslight us and make us believe it and use it to control the population.
I know I said I wasn't going to talk about aliens. I know that that's how I prefaced this entire episode. But as soon as you said that, I was reading a thing the other day about that exact thing.
What am I saying?
Look at Area 51. Look at everything they said about Area 51. They were like, have a little alien. Yeah. Just have a little taste. But we're going to hide. We're going to make it, like, so intense and so make you feel stupid. All this shit. And then when everything, when they had to publish shit and post the videos of UFOs and, like, publish all of these documents, it didn't matter because everyone was already conspiratorial about aliens, so it wasn't considered legitimate because it had been turned into such a conspiracy. I'm not gonna talk about it anymore because,
but hey, 50 years down the road, when they have to admit the truth and fess up about stuff, we're not wearing the tinfoil hats anymore. We were right.
Exactly. That's gonna be my next tattoo. I'm gonna get the tinfoil hat.
I like that. Do I necessarily believe conspiracies are a actual, like, psyop from the government or the military? I'm open to it, to be honest.
This is one that I think could actually have some.
But I just don't want to sound crazy. I don't want people to be like, oh, well, I'm never going to take her word for anything anymore because she's a conspiracy nut. But I'm like, hey, it's possible.
I think we've had similar conversations to this. I think when we were talking about the paranormal tools and, like, ghost hunting tools, and I stand by this concept wholeheartedly, where just because things seem a little bit out there doesn't mean that it's not plausible. And conspiracies are no different, where, yes, a lot of them are quite far-fetched. A lot of them are not realistic whatsoever. A lot of them are just internet gossip and whatever the case may be. But is it really that unbelievable that people in power are covering something up? Like, I think there's some foundation to the idea that they understand how the brain works. They have people who study this and work for this as a living, who are able to help them formulate strategic information and strategic tools in the information processing that they're teaching the greater public that kind of help cover up some of the shadier things. I'm not saying that that's all aliens. I'm not saying that the government's out to kill us and they're all lizards.
But they could be.
But they could be. But is it really that far-fetched to think that, like, look at MKUltra. Look at the government giving syphilis to low-income
areas.
Yeah, it's stuff that has been proven now, but it was considered so far-fetched and so out there. So if it's proven that this shit has happened, why can't the illogical stuff also be a possibility?
Yeah. And there are other, like, psyops in the world, you know, this isn't just, like, the only one. There are actual proven ones. And we can totally do an episode literally just on PSYOPs, because I think they're really interesting. As someone who likes psychological stuff, is it messed up? Yes. But is it interesting? Yes.
But that's what I mean. Look at MKUltra.
Yeah.
This is shit that has happened. So why wouldn't it have happened multiple times?
It's happening right now.
I'm gonna have a breakdown.
And this was just to start the episode. That's all I have on it.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's honestly, I think that's a decent way to start it off, because it keeps it
just a little sprinkle of crazy.
As we go through the rest of our conspiracy theories, it's kind of helpful to have that of like, well, is that something that they're using? So I like it. I like where you're coming from. My first is not like that. Let's talk Titanic for a minute. That's most people's reaction. So I want to preface this by saying I refuse to give credence to the whole Titanic was the Olympic, Olympic was the Titanic bullshit conspiracies.
Did we ever cover that conspiracy?
No, because it's stupid as shit and I'm not doing it. It's not that. It's proven that it wasn't.
We'll cover it
in
another episode.
In all of you fuckers that are trying to debunk it, especially to me, who were like, but look at these pictures. I've been studying this goddamn ship for like 20 years.
That is true. You have.
Shut up. Anyway, so that's not what we're talking about. But I will talk about Titanic for a minute, because the Titanic itself and my obsession wouldn't exist if it wasn't for another ship called the Lusitania. So I'm going to do a mini history. And I say mini, I need you all to know that I really watered this down.
You know a lot more than you're going to say, which is crazy.
I have so much information in my head about all of this stuff. And I was like, Caitlin, you need to reel it in. People don't care. And it's not that you don't care about the big picture stuff. The big picture stuff is cool. It's interesting. It's the fun history that people want to know. The stuff that I know is little numbers and measurements and things
like,
that
they use 37 screws in this plank on this boat, by the way. And I'm like, okay.
Don't even ask me how many rivets are in the hull of the Titanic. I'll tell you.
You know.
I know. My favorite thing, also side note, my favorite thing was going to a Titanic museum with Jamie and having her be like, well, what's this? And me giving her the answer and her being like, oh, that's right. Okay.
I didn't have to read a single thing. I didn't read anything in that museum. I pointed like a child and went, what?
What does this do? What does from?
Yeah, it was great.
Anyway, Lusitania. Brief history. From your resident British shipping expert for some reason.
Put that on your resume.
The RMS Lusitania was basically a major new ship in Britain's shipping industry. So the Cunard Line, Cunard Line, Cunard Line, I've heard a billion people say it a billion different ways. Just putting that out there. The Cunard Line was up against J.P. Morgan's International Mercantile Marine. J.P. Morgan, super famous guy, super rich man, owned a bunch of stuff, including most of the shipping world in the UK. Mm-hmm. He owned the White Star Line, which was the shipping company that built the Titanic. He attempted to buy the Cunard Line. They declined because they didn't want to be taken over by someone that they didn't agree with, which would have been J.P. Morgan. Mm. But they were not necessarily winning this battle. They thought they were standing their ground by declining the offer, but instead they turned him into an enemy, and the Cunard Line and the White Star Line were rival shipping companies. They were also dealing with pressure from German shipping companies who were coming up with all of this new modern equipment. So there was a lot of pressure, and they were losing money fast. So they proposed the building of two new ships that could be converted to armed merchant cruisers if necessary. So they were passenger liners, like big fancy, drawing people to England, to America, to the company itself, but if need be, they could be used for the Royal Navy. And when this was being built, tensions were very high. There was a possibility of war breaking out. Mm-hmm. So the British Army was like, okay, it's probably a good idea. And because of that, it was actually a very smart move shipping-wise, or company-wise, I should say, because it, thanks to their agreeance to have it potentially be a military vessel, the UK government subsidized the building cost.
Mm.
So because the company was already kind of on its last legs, it was a little bit poor, they didn't have to worry about the cost. And they got these brand new state-of-the-art luxury liners, essentially, to bring them afloat. And they didn't have to pay shit for it, which was amazing. They were also getting these new experimental designs from the Royal Navy in Portsmouth. So these are designs that are brand new. It makes people feel safe because the military's designed part of this ship. So there's a less risk, you would think. Unfortunately, a little bit of a foreshadowing there. Didn't end up very well. But with these designs, with this agreeance for subsidizing the cost, the Cunard Line built the Lusitania and the Mauritania. Two sister ships, really big deal, state-of-the-art ships. The Lusitania was built in Clydebank, Scotland, and then it was registered in Liverpool.
Mm.
I have been to the Royal Albert Docks. We've both been to the Royal Albert Docks.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen all of the excitement about the registering of the Lusitania and how proud Liverpool as a city is still to this day of how big of a deal the Lusitania was.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of got overshadowed when Titanic was built, so sorry about that. But anyway, I digress. But there's still so much pride and, like, Liverpool excitement for all of the work that Liverpudlians put into that ship. So it was a really big deal and still is. And for their time, the Lusitania and the Mauritania were considered to be some of the biggest and fastest merchant liners on the market. So it was a really big deal. Small side note, the reason I mentioned Titanic is because the Lusitania and the Mauritania were getting all of this attention. In March of 1909, that's when the White Star Line was like, fuck, we gotta step up our game.
Mm-hmm.
The Cunard Line's stealing our thunder. And they thought, well, they built two ships, we need to build three. They need to be bigger, better, faster, stronger than the Lusitania and the Mauritania. And that's how we got the Titanic.
I got that.
But
power.
But that's how we got the Titanic, the Olympic, and the Britannic. Was because the Lusitania and the Mauritania, their existence was so threatening to the White Star Line that they were like, fuck, we gotta be better. Her maiden voyage took place on September 13th, 1907, and it went from Liverpool to New York. And then it made that route for 7 years and 9 months and did 101 round-trip voyages from Liverpool to New York. And it was considered a highly regarded ship. Like, it was a big deal. The Mauritania had its own happy, cool things. I won't get into that. I could, but I won't. So that's 1907. 7 years, 9 months go by. On May 7th, 1915, the RMS Lusitania was attacked by a U-20, which is a German U-boat. Initially, it was hit by a torpedo, and then the pressure from the torpedo hitting triggered a second explosion within the ship. As a result of that, 18 minutes later, the Lusitania sank off the coast of Ireland, taking with her the lives of 1,201 passengers and crew, and leaving 761 survivors.
Ugh. So that's so many.
It was at the time considered one of the greatest maritime disasters. It was a huge deal because there was no saving. Titanic, obviously there's a lot of issues with how that went down. They had time to get on lifeboats. They had time to come up with a rescue plan, even a little bit. The Lusitania did not. The torpedo hit, the ship exploded, and 18 minutes from the point of combustion, it was at the bottom of the water. So, horrendous experience. 128 of those individuals who passed were American passengers coming from New York to Liverpool. So, as potentially controversial as it is to say, this meant that Americans paid a lot more attention. Because there were Americans on board, it wasn't just a British disaster, it was Americans on board.
Yeah.
What could have potentially been an armed merchant, but was not. I want to make that clear. The Lusitania was not, it had the possibility of acting as an armed ship, but they did not make the decision to follow through with that at that time. So it was a passenger liner with, like, it was a terrible thing to happen. So there was a big uproar about it from both the UK and the American governments. After the sinking of the Lusitania, many countries turned against Germany because they looked at it as a civilian murder, essentially, for no reason, just because the waters were technically war area. It was a civilian casualty. And 2 years after this, the U.S. would officially enter into the First World War. They were no longer just British allies. They entered on their own. And they used images of the sinking and the story of the sinking of the Lusitania as war propaganda against Germany because they were so furious about it. But the conspiracy with it is kind of considering, was this done on purpose? Was this like Germans being shitty, or was there more to it? So essentially, the thought behind it is that the British government, Winston Churchill, the fuckhead that he is, deliberately put the RMS Lusitania in harm's way to get her sunk, to piss the U.S. off and encourage them to join the war.
Yep.
There's a lot of records that are indicative that there was something shady going on, for sure. So it's an interesting concept. What sparked the initial conspiracy theory is that Winston Churchill sent a letter to Walter Runciman, who was the president of Britain's Board of Trade. And in this letter, he wrote, "It is most important to attract neutral shipping to our shores, in the hope especially of embroiling the United States with Germany. For our part, we want the traffic. The more, the better. And if some of it gets into trouble, better still." Essentially saying,
no,
it's gonna piss them off and encourage them to fight more. A lot of the reason they think something like that, they think it was purposeful and that they made the decision not to do the proper precautions, is that, let's go back to March. So the time before, the voyage before this one, the last fatal voyage. So March 6th, 1915, the trade division signaled the Lusitania at Cunard's request and said, "Owners advise keep well out, time arrival to crossbar without waiting." So not only did they give them warning and like communicate with them about when would be effective to cross the waters, The Admiral also sent two destroyers, the HMS Lavrock and the HMS Louis, to essentially escort the Lusitania. And then they sent another ship, the HMS Lions, to patrol the Liverpool Bay outside the docks. Even though there was a shortage of destroyers, they wanted to make sure that there was security, essentially, if there were to be Germans in the waters. They did not want the Lusitania to go unprotected. Compared this to the Lusitania's final crossing, the Admiralty took no precautions whatsoever. There was no orders, there was no escorts, there was no security ships, even though, so there was a shortage in March. They were still able to send three ships. In May, when this occurred, there were four destroyers sitting idly that were not dispatched. There was no communication to let the Lusitania know that the Germans had already attacked the Earl of Latham, the Candidate, and the Centurion, and they had also attempted another ship. These attacks were specifically requested to reach the Lusitania because they were in the same waters.
Yeah.
And 23 merchant vessels had been torpedoed in the same area that the Lusitania was in since the Lusitania had left New York. And not a single word of any of those attacks were relayed. There's essentially a month and a half's difference.
That's messed up, man.
So there's there's a lot of little things like that. So there's also speculation because Winston Churchill and the Admiralty communicated quite frequently. There was no correspondence between Churchill and the Admiralty from the time of Lusitania's last crossing. So based on the little details, there's a lot of speculation that there was influence with the codebreakers in Room 40 and their willingness to share where the German submarines and where the U-boats would have been. If there was some sort of shady business going on, essentially. Realistically looking at the situation, you have to consider if it was a conspiracy or if it was a fuck-up. If it was a really, really big military oversight.
Yeah, which happens.
Because, 100%.
And nobody wants to admit that that happens. Like,
realistically looking at it, the only evidence there is of any sort of conspiracy would have been withholding information. There was no way that Churchill was communicating with Germany and telling them where the boat was going to be and how the torpedo would have happened. Essentially, the realistic side of it is that if they did it on purpose, they withheld the information and hoped that something would happen. There was no way that they could have guaranteed that the torpedo would have hit, that they would have fired a torpedo at all. They just kind of went in hoping that the attempt alone, even if there was an attempt, would piss off the states enough for them to become allies.
Yeah.
It's still terrible, but it's also possible that it was just a fuck up and there was no communication.
What do you personally believe?
Personally, I think it's a combination of both.
Okay, yeah.
I think there was a cover up of something because there's no way that this happened. There's no way that this would have happened if proper precautions were taken. Whether those precautions were purposely forced to not be followed, or whether it was, again, another one of those oversights, it should not have happened. It's possible that, kind of going into the conspiracy that we started with, it's possible that the conspiracy and the idea of a cover-up, essentially, is trying to distract from the fact that it was a fuck-up on their part. You know what I mean? They don't want to take accountability for the lack of foresight and the lack of preparation and the lack of safety that they took for these people. So it was a lot easier to blame a higher power, blame the man, and turn it into, like, nitpicking all of these little details rather than say, yeah, the Royal Navy made a mistake. Yeah, the Admiralty made a mistake.
Well, you also because, like, from a legal perspective, if they did admit that, that puts them up for getting sued. People could lose their jobs.
Exactly.
But I believe what you believe, because I trust your opinion, and you know more about this than 95% of the population.
I mean, it should also be said that realistically, the idea of the British government trying to pull the US into a war is a little bit far-fetched.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. It makes sense. It's possible. But look at 1915. Look at the state of the First World War. Look at 1915. The United States was not prepared to go into war. Shockingly, that is my short cover.
That's your short.
Oh, dude, I ran through all of the information I had originally written down.
It's been like 25 minutes.
Yeah, you're welcome. I promise my other two are not nearly as in-depth. So anyway, that's the sinking of the Lusitania. Was it on purpose? Was it a ploy to get the U.S. to join the war? Who knows?
We do.
Or government's just stupid.
Dun dun. May I segue into a less serious topic?
Please do. Please shut me up.
Okay, so this one, also a niche topic, but will you care? I don't know. Will the audience care? I don't know. Do I care? Well, I care now absolutely. That I've researched it.
Right.
The NBA, are you familiar?
The basketball?
Yes, the basketball.
I have heard of
the end basketball of sentence. Before. So the theory is, actually, I feel like I should preface this. No, I'm just going to say it and then I'll explain it because
okay.
The NBA draft is rigged. It's fixed.
Okay, probably.
I think that this matters because while it's not serious like life or death, it is affecting people who bet on games like football fantasy, but like basketball. I don't know what those are called. Basketball fantasy?
The basketball.
The basketball fantasy teams.
I'm a professional.
And like the people who have like heard of this theory or believe this theory, it also causes a sense of distrust in your community, in the world itself, in fame, in Hollywood, in the government. It also makes you kind of question, you know, your favorite players and your favorite celebrities. And that sort of leads you into this whole paranoia of like, what's
who
real?
Who can you trust?
Who can you trust? Because let's be honest, Hollywood has done it before. They've bamboozled us before.
They sure have.
And so there's also a theory that David Stern, who is the NBA commissioner, rigged the lottery.
Mr. Basketball. Gotcha.
Mr. Basketball, yes. There are theories that he started the rigging in 1985 in that original lottery. And, like, if you want to get political, it causes distrust in polls and elections and
in every other sport. Let's not even get started about the last election.
Yeah, don't even get us started. And I think it also makes you kind of question even big sports events like the Olympics. Are some people just set up to fail? Yes. Are they, like, because there's TV shows and movies about that where they're like the Hunger Games. The game makers make it so that a certain person will either win or they'll die because they're like, actually, this person's being really problematic. Get rid of them. They're too far away from the border. Push them closer. That's why they're called game makers. So I know I'm ranting about this and I look crazy and all my hand signals, you're just like...
I wish you guys could see Jamie when she records.
No, because I look crazy. I'm like leaning in front of the camera.
She's got the Italian hands happening.
I got the Italian hands. Anyway, and there's reason for them. The all-powerful them.
The basketball guys.
Yeah, the basketball rich guys to fix the draft because they've got high stakes as it is. They want certain teams to win. They want their favorites to win. They want whatever's going to make the most money to win because it's a business in a capitalist society in a dystopian era. Anyway, and also, apparently, it would also be kind of dumb for them to not rig it because there are billions 100%. Of dollars at stake and popularity, social media.
that's...
If you just put a bunch of random people together who don't know each other and have no chemistry and don't work well together, no one's going to want to watch that team.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to say, is I've always felt... Basketball was one sport that I never got into.
Yeah.
I dated a basketball player, and yeah. that was a mistake. It, like, growing up watching hockey and football, like, I've always felt like there has to be some sense of favoritism. Like, obviously, there's...
Yeah, it's about an entertaining show. They're making a show for you.
I think it has to be pointed out that there's always going to be people who are more desired. And when it comes to a draft, it's first come, first serve. Whoever gets them first, whoever puts in the best bid. I understand that aspect of things. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, like, the average players, if everyone was on a level playing field, everyone had the same skill set, there are still going to be people who have more power.
Yeah.
So I feel like when it comes to all of these drafts, there has to be some level of authenticity to a theory like this,
mm-hmm.
because there is no way power does not corrupt, even in something as simple as picking who's going to be on your sports.
Yeah.
There's just no way.
And sometimes corruption happens subconsciously.
100%. But when you're fighting for power, you're fighting for popularity, you're bound to have a level of corruption at some point. And I think to maintain, you're absolutely right, to maintain those devoted fans who want to see this person play for this team, or want to see this person get off this team, mm-hmm. or want to see what this person can bring to the sport if they're an up-and-comer. Like, in order to keep that excitement going, there has to be... Essentially, like you're saying, there has to be a game maker. There has to be some power exerted. Because if you leave it all up to chance, you're going to get a Katniss.
If you're a basketball, email us at...
yeah. Mr. Basketball, I am asking formally.
Thank you for validating my psycho rant.
Of course.
Because I didn't care about this now, and then I went down a rabbit hole, and I was like, wait a minute, you're right.
It's funny because I had a very similar conversation with the guy that was a basketball player. It's just interesting how even within the fandom, is that what they call it?
I think they just say fans.
The fans? Yeah. Within?
Within the basketball fans.
Within the basketball guys.
The NBA team go friends.
Yep. The... Yep.
It's getting worse. Finish your sentence.
Within that sphere, they're even admitting, like, yeah, but they wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
Well, that's just, like, interesting to me.
It's like reality TV. You know it's kind of fabricated, but you're eating it up anyway.
I was going to say, Love Island wouldn't be the same if they didn't purposely throw in some shit disturbers, if they didn't have that little bit of control to make some drama.
Someone to stir the pot.
And you and I yell at Love Island the way that our dads yell at sports. So...
Love Island is basketball. Change the topic. You tell me yours. This is crazy.
My next conspiracy theory. Like I said, not nearly as in-depth as my first one, I promise you.
Good.
I want to talk about money laundering.
I love it. I mean...
Great.
I don't partake. I love the theory.
Let's talk about Mattress Firm.
Yes!
This, for some reason... I
100% believe this, by the way.
So do I.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't... If we think about buying a mattress, shall we? I've never bought one. But let's think about it. It's not something you buy often.
Mm-hmm.
They are not a high-demand thing. No one is like, fuck, I gotta get 4 mattresses.
Right now.
And I'm gonna need another one in a week, you know? Yeah. You buy a mattress, you spend, it's a good investment, and then hopefully you have the mattress for at least like 5, 6, whatever years to come, right? So it's not like it's a huge commodity. It's not like everybody needs a mattress all at once. When I think about buying a mattress, there's a few places I can think of, but I don't know where the physical stores are off the top of my head.
I've never bought my own mattress.
Not a major aspect of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Not a major aspect of most people's lives. So, people started noticing when Mattress Firm, an American mattress company, started showing up everywhere.
Like at strip malls and like a lot of them.
There was at one point, I think it was in Indiana, there were 5 mattress firms within 1 mile of each other. I promise you, there is no possible way that your inventory at each of these stores is selling out so quickly and so aggressively that you need to send people to 4 other accessible locations within a 1 mile radius.
Yeah. People that also order ludicrous. Stuff online.
100%. But even if it was solely an in-person thing, that is ludicrous. That's insane. So people started noticing that everywhere there was a Mattress Firm, it seemed like they were constantly everywhere. Everywhere they looked, there was a Mattress Firm on a corner. When they would go into the Mattress Firm, it didn't feel like a super, like, welcoming store environment. Like, when you walk into a normal store and there's, like, all these people swarming to help,
mm-hmm.
it didn't feel like that. It felt very empty. It felt, something felt off. Almost like Uncanny Valley, kind of, like,
mm-hmm.
vibe, where something's just a little bit wrong. So people started speculating that there was no way that a store like Mattress Firm, where there is not a huge influx of customers at all times, could not possibly be making enough money to support the stores that it had, let alone to be opening as many franchises as it was. And this theory kind of originated thanks to a Reddit comment. This idea was brought up, and someone pointed out that Mattress Firm at this time, which was, I think it was like 2016,
mm-hmm.
Mattress Firm operated more than 3,600 stores in the States.
Mm-hmm.
That is ridiculous. Mattress, like, I don't know. That feels like a lot.
Yep.
Coming from someone who worked in retail, we did not have that many stores.
Yeah.
And we were a big company.
Yeah.
Let alone a mat. I don't know. Wild to me. Anyway, someone else pointed out that Mattress Firm was owned by a man named Steinhoff. Steinhoff International, which is a South African company, had purchased Mattress Firm. And the comment said that they were currently embroiled in a money laundering saga.
Mm.
This was not entirely accurate, but they were not far off. So essentially, in December of 2017, Steinhoff International revealed, and I quote, accounting irregularities, and were dealing with kind of a comeback from accounting fraud. And it was said that investigators found that top management figures entered into fictitious transactions with entities purported to be independent third parties to create the illusion of income used to hide losses at the company's operating units.
So it is true.
So, legally speaking, that does not implicate them in money laundering.
Mm.
And according to the reporting, Steinhoff International had a lack of money, not an abundance of it. So they were covering up not having money rather than hoarding a bunch of money. That does not negate the fishiness of it.
Yeah.
And feels to me like an excuse for money laundering.
Yeah. Well, because you're not going to go and advertise that you're making a whole bunch of money. If what's worse, if the government says, oh, you're making like millions of dollars, or, oh, you're poor, you don't have enough money. Exactly. I'm going to play the victim and be like, I don't have any money.
And I'm also going to point out, no, I didn't read anything about this, but I feel like if Steinhoff was already controversial, and they had, like, Steinhoff International had their own issues with previous companies that they had mm-hmm. owned. So if a South African company buys a U.S. company, do they not have access to South African bank where that money could go?
I mean, I would think about it.
Right?
I don't know anything about international banking, but I feel like it's probably not as simple as we think it is, but I think it's possible.
Exactly. I was wrong. It wasn't 2016, it was 2018. Sorry.
I don't believe you anymore.
The other fishy thing about this is that when it became sort of a meme, when everyone was like, huh, Mattress Firm's money laundering, it's all bullshit, the company obviously had to respond to this.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to either confirm or deny.
Mm-hmm.
And the CEO of Mattress Firm, Ken Murphy, stated that the money laundering allegations were absolutely false. End quote. 2 days later, Ken Murphy announced his resignation as CEO for Mattress Firm.
Yeah, because that doesn't look suspicious.
I don't know. I'm not going to say anything more about that. I'm just going to drop that there and let you come to your own conclusions. I'm just saying. It seems like if you got nothing to hide, why would you quit your job as the CEO of a company? I don't know.
I think that looks really suspicious.
That's Mattress Firm.
That's mattresses. I don't know if you've heard this theory. I think I might have mentioned it to you. I mentioned it to somebody.
You're talking to other bitches?
Yeah.
Wow. You're just like the rest of them.
I'm sorry. It is that the Sandy Hook shooting was fake.
Oh, we have not talked about this, but I have heard this.
Yeah.
And it infuriates me.
For reference, the Sandy Hook shooting was Sandy Hook was an elementary school, and they had a mass shooting in which a 20-year-old Adam Lanza shot and killed 26 people. 20 of those victims were literal children between the ages of, 6 and 7, I think. And this happened in 2012.
Was it 2012?
Very devastating, awful, messed up.
Oh my god.
Shocker. Our not so good old friend decided he thought it was fake. Alex Jones.
Oh, my fucking frog guy.
The man who brought us they're turning the frickin' frogs gay.
Frickin' frog.
Decided to say within hours of the shooting happening, he started telling people that he thought it was a staged event because he thought that they were trying to confiscate people's guns and make gun control stricter, which should be, anyway. Mm-hmm. And within days of the event happening, he started mentioning that he thought that the parents of the children who were murdered were actors, and that they weren't actually grieving parents, they were faking it.
Yeah, they were grief actors.
And he's continued throughout the years to describe this massacre as fake, as staged, and because of this, he has led his followers and actual conspiracy theorists who do harm, not us, we just like kooky things, people have actually, who follow him, have harassed these parents, they've sent death threats, they've accused them of faking their own children's deaths, and the parents obviously have felt unsafe and upset by this news. I would too. To the point where they sued him. And as won. They should.
Yeah.
Yes. So
he's a fucking idiot.
In 2022, Alex Jones was sentenced to pay around $1 billion for spreading these fictitious lies. Sorry, $965 million, but still.
Oof. Not to dwell on the severity of the situation, because, yes, it's a serious topic, but it's also, I don't want to bring this episode down too significantly, mm-hmm. but what I do in school and what I do in work is I deal with grief counseling, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And in trauma situations, especially when it's involving young children, which is what I specialize in, the impact that situations like Sandy Hook have on a generation, have on external families, not even considering the actual families that are directly impacted, is exponential.
It scared my parents, and we didn't live anywhere near the area.
I vividly remember watching. I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
Vividly remember watching the news. That's why I was like, what do you mean it was 2012?
It was in the States. We are in Canada, and it was still crazy.
The conversations we had to have at school, the conversations we had to have with our families.
Yeah.
It's a scary, scary thing. And to think that anyone can be so up their own ass and able to look at a situation like that as anything other than just tragic and heartbreaking, like, it disgusts me. And we've said it before, and I'll continue to say it. We say it in the intro of the show. The scariest part about anything isn't the paranormal. It isn't the cryptids. It's people and how disgusting the lack of empathy can turn a human to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex Jones is a prime example of that. And I think it's good that you pointed out that there's a significant difference between talking about goofy conspiracy theories and actively abusing and degrading parents who had to watch their child be buried.
Yeah, we don't ever want to be like them.
Off my soapbox now. Sorry about that.
It's okay. It was a valid soapbox.
Thank you. Anyway, those are my thoughts on it. It pisses me off.
But yeah. I just thought it was worth mentioning.
Absolutely. You want to talk about money laundering again?
I do. I love learning about money.
You got better. I love learning about money. So, for my final conspiracy, talking to Jamie about the Mattress Firm stuff reminded me of this fucking wild experience that Calgary is still in the midst of when it comes to money laundering. And it was a really, really big topic of conversation when this place first opened, and it's kind of dimmed out. But I drove past it not that long ago, and I was like, what is happening? So, where I live in Alberta has essentially, yeah, there's like 3-4, if you count a different mall. But there's 3 big malls.
Yeah.
We have South Centre, we have Chinook Centre, and we have Cross Iron Mills. Those are the 3 big malls. Everybody goes shopping there. So a couple years ago, this random company decided they were going to build a new mall directly across from Cross Iron Mills. And they decided...
I've seen it.
You have.
Because I literally asked you, like, what is that? What is the point of that? That looks stupid.
That's fair. So this mall, they've called the New Horizon Mall. And their catchphrase is the local business marketplace. What they've set it up as is a place for local businesses to set up physical stores. They've got market vendors. They can lease the stores to you for a little bit cheaper than a commercial mall that's owned by something like CF would have. However, you want to talk about Uncanny Valley. Dude, walking into this mall, it's not stores. It's glass cubicles. You cannot walk around in most of these stores. Half of them are not open. 90% of them don't have business names. They're just people in chairs in these cubicles with a couple, like, clothes on a hang, or, like, on a rack. Or, like, candy. I wish I had pictures of the inside of it, because it's nuts. I'm going to try to find someone to put on Instagram.
Yeah.
There is no branding anywhere. There's no commercial stores whatsoever. There's probably 30 of these cubicle things filled. There's probably 150 of them available. It is empty.
How are they upstairs, affording to, like...
Upstairs in the food court, and I say that with air quotes, there's, like, 3 restaurants that are open. And again, no commercial places. There's, like, a local shawarma place and, like, 2 pizza places and a boba shop, like, okay. A boba stand. And then 90% of the upstairs is this insane children's play place, but there's, like, no kids in it. There is nobody at this mall. It is gigantic. And I do not know how for years it has stayed afloat. And it started off probably a month or two after it opened, where everyone in Calgary was like, this is a front for money laundering 1,000,000%. And I have never so fervently believed a conspiracy before, where I'm like, there's no way that this is a functioning, genuine business. I cannot even begin to describe to you how weird this mall is. It is not a mall.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like what a mall I would make in The Sims is, because I don't actually know how to make a mall.
Not even that. It's like if you took a bunch of acid and just tripped that you were at, like, a futuristic mall. It's like, it has the vibe of an airport. Of, like, airport shops. But worse.
That is so weird.
And there's, like, there's nobody working in these stores half the time. Anytime I've gone, you have to figure out where the cashier is. Half the stuff isn't for sale. I went with my friends Natasha and Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
And we were asking about, like, oh, is this thing in the window for sale? How much is it? And they were like, nope, that's not for sale. Nope, that's not for sale.
Why are you here?
Exactly. So, significantly less in-depth than my other conspiracies, but I promise you, this one's legit.
I believe it. I feel like a lot of strip malls are like that, where it's like, how are you keeping this business on? I come in here maybe, like, once every 6 months, and I see, like, two or three people, maybe.
Dude, like, it's insane. But it doesn't even, like, that makes it seem like, oh, yeah, it's, like, a shitty little strip mall. It's not even that. That's what the Marlboro Mall is. That's a shitty little mall that, like, yeah, probably could close and probably should close down. But at least I'm like, yeah, I know I can go in there and there's going to be a McDonald's. I know I can go in there and there's going to be, like, mall stores.
Yeah.
This is just random glass cubicles.
Mm.
And it's nuts to me.
I wish I
had. And it has to be money laundering or I will eat my foot.
Oh. And that is selective cannibalism.
Yes, it is. Thank you for indulging in whatever this was.
Mm-hmm.
I felt good. I got to talk about ships.
Yeah.
I got to talk about mattresses. We got to talk about some intense topics. That's good. I feel like this was a good batch of conspiracies.
Yeah. I feel like I've conspiracied myself out. I'm like, tuck me in and give me a cup of water. I could go to bed.
I'm going to crack another Red Bull. And also probably go to bed. Let us know what you guys thought of our conspiracies. I personally would love to hear your feedback. Jamie would love to hear your feedback. We want to know if you think any of these have any credence to them. If you agree, if you disagree, if you have a conspiracy of your own you'd like to share with us that you'd like us to chat about, please feel free to do so. You can email us at our email, which is creepsandcoffee@gmail.com. You can get in touch and check out all of the photos of the weird situations that we chatted about today on our Instagram and our Twitter at Creeps and Coffee. If you would like to help support the show and help fund our caffeine-fueled recording sessions, maybe you don't want to do that based on how today went. That's fair. But if you would also like to have a little bit more of an in-depth look at what is happening behind the scenes of our show, you can check out our Buy Me a Coffee page, which is buymeacoffee.com/creepsandcoffee. As always, thank you for listening, folks. We love you.
Are we out?
We'll see you next time.
Dropping mics. Bye-bye.
Bye. Creeps and Coffee is produced and edited by us, Kate and Jane.
Our theme music is Stuck in a Hole by Dated.
For more information on where to find them, check out the link in our show notes. And to connect with us, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Creeps and Coffee.